Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I want to remind you that these programs are also uploaded to our website. You can go to parkwaychurchofchrist.com and listen to these programs and past programs if you're interested in doing so. I want to remind you of the service times of the Parkway Church. We meet at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings for Bible classes, and then on Sundays at 10 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the evenings for worship services together in the auditorium of the building. And then also we have classes for different age groups on Wednesday evenings at 7. And we hope you'll come and meet with us. By the way, our approach to the Bible is the whole Bible. You'll see that this morning in the program. Our approach to the Bible is that it is all inspired of God, and all parts of it are important to us. However, that approach also includes the fact, our conviction, that we are not under the old patriarchal law today or the law of Moses today. We're under law to Christ, which means we're under the gospel law, the New Testament. Jesus, according to Hebrews chapter 9, ratified this law into law, and we are under the law of Christ today. We're to fulfill the law of Christ, Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2. And so the New Testament is very clear about that, and we want to appreciate the fact that we're under the gospel. That does not mean that we cannot learn from the Old Testament. In places and cases where the New Testament mentions something, teaches something, and we need a history on that, or we need an explanation of it, or definitions that can be provided, we're certainly welcome to go back to the Old Testament for information about that. We'll be doing that today on the subject of murder and capital punishment. Sadly, this past week we saw another mass shooting up in Maine, and there were many casualties, and these things are always so sad to witness. And sadly, also, of course, you have the loss of life, you have injuries, and sometimes, and even maybe possibly by the time of the airing of this program, there will be people who have succumbed to injuries and been added to the fatality list. Let's hope not. Let's hope not, but sadly that does and can happen. And so these things are always just great and sad tragedies, and somewhat of a reflection back upon our society. Now, sadly, most of the time these things are politicized. People automatically think in terms of objects, inanimate objects. They think in terms of controlling things that are actually under the control of humans with free agency. For example, gun control, or if it's an automobile, you know, what things you might do about that. And people just tend to completely ignore who is responsible. The thing that is actually responsible is, of course, a person. It's not a thing. It's someone. It's someone who acts on their own volition, their own free agency, and does something atrocious. We just, of course, saw this in a mass way over in Israel with what Hamas did to a bunch of Israelis and Americans and others, other nationalities, and the slaughter of innocent people, including babies, little children, and women, in terror attacks. So we've had to talk about this for a couple of weeks. One of the things that is always a problem, we're seeing it in both of these cases, you see it in the instance of the American shooter in Maine, you also see it overseas with the Hamas attack on Israel. All of a sudden, the wrong things are blamed. Rather than blame the person who is culpable, the culprit, rather than blaming the perpetrator, something or someone else is blamed. If you go to the Bible on this, it's pretty interesting, and I'm going to try to limit our study to just the subject of murder today. But one of the things you see consistently in the Bible under various ages in which God had laws governing behavior is that the person who committed the crime is the one who pays for it. Now, wouldn't it be great if we had a system like that today, that that the problem is the person who commits the crime, and that the people need to be dealt with. I was fascinated, for example, let me give you an example of this in the news related to the main shooter. While so many people, progressives, liberals, socialists, their main approach on this is we have to do something about guns. And I thought, well, in this case, there could have been something done, because the shooter had pretty much tipped his hand on what his mentality was. He had already threatened to go to a National Guard base and shoot it up. He had already threatened to do that. He had spent time in a mental facility. People knew that he said that he was hearing voices. Now, friends, that's some evidence that that person needed to be dealt with before some tragedy like this happened. So, still, though, the emphasis needs to be on dealing with the person. In this case, perpetrator, but it could have been potential. The potential killer, that's when it should have been addressed. But anyway, people tend not to do that, because it's always about, in our modern culture, it's always about avoiding responsibility. Whatever position can be taken that keeps responsible people from being responsible for what they're doing, that seems to be the position that most people take. Some of us cannot understand that. We cannot relate to it, and hence the division in thought and approach between those who follow law and those who don't. And by the way, if you're talking about civil law, then you have a high law in our country, the Constitution, and then other laws that are situated and placed under that law, but must be constitutional themselves. So you have a civil law, but those of us who are religious, we have a much better law, a much higher law, a perfect law. James 1:25 calls it the perfect law of liberty. It's an infallible law, an infallibly safe law. If we could implement this law, we would have much safer societies, safer cities, and we would have much less crime. And I want to talk about that this morning. What about this subject of murder? It's a simple fact that there can be deterrence to crime. When people understand that there's definitely going to be some severe consequence for their actions, that they are going to actually be held responsible, it is a deterrent. I am convinced that many people out around us even today, have the potential for doing some very bad things, committing atrocities. But the deterrence is there because they're concerned about what is going to happen to them in the commission of whatever crime they might do. Or they're concerned about the consequences if they get caught. Some people maybe don't want to go to prison. What if we had rules like this, laws like this? Beginning in the Old Testament, very early in the Old Testament, we read in Genesis chapter 9 about the sanctity of life. And we have the change that occurred in God granting to humans the right to eat animals. Just don't eat the blood of the animal was the prohibition in verse 4. Surely your blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require it, at the hand of man. And the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of a man. And then later in the law of Moses, there were laws about if a bull, you know, gore someone, it's to be executed. But look at verse 6 of Genesis 9. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. Now, that is the capital punishment law for murder, quite briefly stated. If you kill someone, then you are to be killed. I wonder how many people who are murderers or potential murderers, wonder how much their behavior would be affected if they knew that was coming. If they knew. Now, I know there are some that are sociopaths. and psychopaths, unreasoning, and they act out of their minds. And I realize there are people like that out there. But there are others who simply make calculations. And I wonder how many people, how much crime would be deterred if we had a law like this. The death penalty for murder. Now, you might be thinking, well, Tim, you just said we're not under the law of Moses, and, you know, here you are reading from Genesis chapter 9. But I want to show you something interesting. And before this program is over, we'll be in the New Testament talking about New Testament teaching about murder. But those New Testament passages invite us back to these Old Testament passages as far as punishment is concerned. Keep that in mind. We'll get to that later. In Genesis chapter 9, in verse 13, verses 11 through 14, you have God's discussion about not destroying the earth again using water. Now, 2 Peter 3 talks about another type of destruction, but not using water. And he gave his promise by setting his bow, the rainbow, what we call the rainbow, in the sky. Now, friends, do you ever see a rainbow today? We see them regularly. Certain conditions, certain clouds and light conditions, and you're going to see a rainbow. And this is something that we can read about in Genesis 9 and still see today. So there are some things in Genesis 9 that projected into the future and spanned all dispensations, that is, all forms of God's government of His people. Right? Well, what's in the middle of this? The sanctity of human life. Is it not still true that humans are still in creatures in the image of God? Rational beings, free agents, having the capacities for love, hate, other what we call emotions, have a sense of justice. Yes, we're beings in the image of God still today, even though we're under the law of Christ today. Well, if you move forward in your Bible, you'll see Exodus chapter 20. And it said in verse 13, "Thou shalt not kill." Some people, I know the Catholic Church takes this position, and they're wrong on it, but some people say this means all killing, and which would, of course, nullify Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. And if that's what, you know, if they're right about that, then there would be a nullification of Genesis 9, 6 by the law of Moses. The problem for them is they're wrong. The word means to murder, and it is so translated in translations. But I'm going to tell you something, friends. The most effective way to consider this, convincing way, is to go to the New Testament where Jesus and others quoted from Exodus chapter 20 and some of the Ten Commandments, quoted, citing these passages, and used the Greek word for slaying with intent, or what we call murder. Malice aforethought. By the way, just like in Numbers chapter 35 and verse 20, we'll look at here in a minute. Keep that in mind. Now, what I'm talking about specifically, if you take notes, Matthew 19:18, where Jesus was talking to the rich ruler, and he cited the commandments. But in our Greek New Testaments, there is a word for that, phanao. And it is the same word that is used by Paul in various places. You have it used in Romans chapter 13 in verse 9, where he cites some of the Ten Commandments, including adultery and murder and stealing. And what else? James, not just Paul and not just Jesus, but even James in James chapter 2 and verse 11 does exactly the same thing. Now, the word they used for killing is the word murder, or it should be translated murder because it means killing with intent. It is intentional. And by the way, the Bible is very careful to maintain the difference between manslaughter and murder, between killing with intent and unintentional killing. It's very specific. Let me just skip ahead a little bit. In Exodus chapter 21, you go from chapter 20, and I always like to point out that in Exodus 21 and verse 12, it says, "He who smites a man so that he die shall surely be put to death." If friends, pay attention here. If Exodus 20 and verse 13, where it says, "Thou shalt not kill," is a prohibition against all killing, even punitive killing, the death penalty, then how on earth can it be that chapter 21, one chapter later, in verse 12, says, "If you strike a man so that he dies, you shall surely be put to death"? How can that be? But more exactly, more particularly, when you get over into the book of Numbers in chapter 35, and it deals extensively with this idea of killing. And it's the whole passage is introduced, of course, talking about the need for establishing the cities of refuge. Initially, there would be six. Then after they would take the conquest of the land of Canaan, they would add 42 more for a total of 48 of these cities. Now, a refuge city, the purpose of the refuge city was to provide security, shelter for someone who had killed someone, but not with intent. And you'd have family members that would be chasing these people down. And what the book of Numbers does in chapter 35 is draws very carefully the distinction between intentional killing, what we call murder, and unintentional killing. And I want to read a few verses here so you can understand this. He talks about in verse 15 of Numbers 35, the city of refuge for someone that kills a person, look at this friends, without intent. He kills someone without intent. It's an accident. The old thing of the axe head flying off the axe handle or something like that. And he gives some examples here of it later, but I don't have time to read all of this. So if you have time, friends, Numbers, and you're interested in this, Numbers 35, 16 through the end of the chapter is great on this subject. "But if he struck him down with an iron object so that he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death. If he struck him down with a stone tool that could cause death and he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death. If he struck down with a wooden tool that he causes his death and he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death." Then it switches from these intentional killings to unintentional killings. And in these cases, the man had the chance, if he could flee to one of these refuge cities, then he would stay there. Now, he was to stay put, and there's an explicit warning, he must remain in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest, verse 28, okay? So, the Old Testament contained rules about this. If he were to leave prior to the death of the high priest, he goes and decides, "Hey, I think I'm going to go ahead and get out of here," and the avenger is out there waiting for him, he could kill him and do so with impunity. So keep in mind all these things, these regulations. But look at verse 30. "If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the evidence of witnesses. No person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Moreover," verse 31, "you shall accept no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall be put to death." Look at these rules, friends. These have to do with killing. You have unintentional killing, but you also have some killings that were with malice aforethought, or what is called intentional. And in these cases, what do you read? You read the same thing that you read in Exodus 21 in verse 12. The same thing that you read back in the days of Noah in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. He is to surely be put to death. Now, these passages are clear. And throughout the Old Testament, we have some examples of this type of thing. And sometimes you'll have mass murder carried out in a mass way by a group of people. and then the entire nation of people is to be exterminated. That's exactly what you read about in 1 Samuel chapter 15. Now, we usually call that war. War, when you have an entire group of people, a country of people, an entire population, a nation of people, or a city, if you sometimes you think in terms of city-states, an entire group of people of the same mindset, same ideology, and they go and they murder some people, maybe in another country, another nation. And then you're going to have mass retaliation. The murderers still need to be put to death, but sometimes when it gets on that scale, we just simply call it war. And sometimes, and in those cases, war is totally justified. It's totally justified because it is simply the carrying out of these instructions, the carrying out of this punishment in a mass or massive way, involving more than just one perpetrator. You had multiple perpetrators. They all need to be killed. Now, you know, some people say, but when we get into the New Testament, is it still true that the death penalty is justified or authorized? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. Paul, in Romans chapter 13, I want you to keep in mind the passages that I gave you earlier in Matthew 19, 18, and James 2, 11, Romans chapter 13 and verse 9. Now, there are other places where that particular Greek word is translated murder in the New Testament, but those are the ones where you have quotations actually from the Ten Commandment passage of Exodus chapter 20. It's pretty fascinating when you think about it. So you have this idea of murder, the killing of someone with intent, with malice aforethought. It's not merely an accident. All right. Then you have passages like Romans 13 a little earlier. Romans 13, for example, in verse 3. Paul is talking about the role of God-approved civil government. Now, friends, I'm going to have to make an observation here. Our government is not doing this today. Our government is not punishing the perpetrators. Murderers, cold-blooded murderers, that is, people who commit, kill people with intent, with malice aforethought, need to be executed. Paul said in Romans chapter 13 and verse 3, rulers are not a terror to good works. Now, this is where our, right now in our country, it's flip-flopped. It's totally flip-flopped. Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. For example, let me just give you an example of this. Lawful gun owners are being targeted now more than ever than they ever have been in the history of our country. It is chronic. Those who keep up with this type of thing know what I'm talking about. And the Second Amendment is under assault. So again, even this week, we have calls for banning what's called assault rifles. That would be a semi-automatic gun of a certain configuration that's capable of using a high-capacity magazine. And the argument is always the same. You don't need a magazine that holds a certain amount, and they always arbitrarily make up a number. You don't need a magazine that holds more than 30, or that holds 30 rounds. That's typically the argument. Well, you would need a magazine that holds 30 rounds if the person who is attacking you has a gun with 30 rounds, and the person who's attacking you is a criminal, has a criminal mindset, and has no respect for gun laws, and he's going to still have his gun with a 30-round magazine. So what are they attacking? They're attacking the thing. They're not going after personal responsibility. They're not going after the perpetrator, are they? Well, Romans chapter 13 sounds a lot like an Old Testament passage. But he says here, rather than punish those who are doing what is right, will you do what? Will you then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have the praise of the same. If you do what is right, you will have praise of the same. But what if people do what is wrong? It says, for he, civil authority is the minister of God to you for good. If you do what is evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Now, friends, I realize that there's going to be some thinking involved in. There's going to be some reasoning involved in determining what crimes are worthy of capital punishment. That is, what should crimes should be capital crimes. I realize that. I put together a study on this some years ago, going through the Old Testament and stripping out of my study anything that was related to the ceremonial aspects of the law of Moses. And my conclusions were that certainly murder, that's stipulated in the Old Testament. Murder and rape, even rape in a certain circumstance, was a death penalty law. Now, sometimes what people do is they'll go through and pick out some of the ones that are more based on ceremonial law rather than on moral law. But if you follow the moral law, that would be the accurate way to do this, because we're talking about making an application of these things in a time when we're under the law of Christ. So you have to be careful on it. But clearly Romans 13 verse 4 talks about killing someone. Civil authorities executing someone. Now, I think the most obvious would be murderers, because you have the weight of the Old Testament on that. Murderers. Those who commit similar atrocities or things in that vein. I also think of rape when I think of this. But what if we just acted upon murder? We have plenty of background for this. We have plenty of teaching in the Bible on it. We have a law that was given right alongside the rainbow covenant in Genesis 9. That one seems obvious to me. And yet even our country, does not do what this passage is talking about. And by the way, when he said, does not bear the sword in vain, the sword, we know from the words of Jesus in Matthew 26, is a symbol of death. Those who take the sword shall what? Perish by the sword. It's a symbol of death. Jesus even acknowledged that. You know, in Acts chapter 25, when Paul was forced into invoking some civil legal protections for himself because of the Jews that were so mad at him for preaching the gospel to Gentiles, that they wanted to kill him, and tried to do that on numerous occasions. Well, in Acts chapter 25, it just got to the point where Paul said, if I am an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. What's he admitting there? Paul believed in the death penalty, didn't he? And then it goes on, talks about how he appealed to Caesar. He appealed to Caesar, really, to protect himself, legally. He sought some legal protection, as we say today. So, the New Testament talks about murder in various sin list passages. It talks about it in the book of Revelation. It is condemned. We know that there is spiritual condemnation upon those who commit murder and do not repent. But what about the physical consequence of just committing cold-blooded murder? That's, you know, friends, really the only way to restore an attitude of respecting the sanctity of human life in our country is going to be to do this. And some states still have the death penalty, but the Bible certainly authorizes it. And we need to appreciate and believe what these passages teach. Maybe God knows something more than we do about criminal reform and deterrence and things of that nature. Our time is up today. We thank you for listening. We hope you'll tune in next week for another study. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.